January 30th, 2018, regular meeting of the Chatham County Metropolitan Planning Commission to come to order. And I guess we'll stand for the invocation and pledge allegiance. Mr. Mayor, is the invocation.
We thank you, O Lord, for the good weather that we're having. We thank you for all the many blessings that we receive. Look on our service men and women who serve us all over the world. Bring them home safely to us. Give us the desire to make honest and fair decisions, and we ask this in your holy name. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And I'd like to thank the MPC staff for the beautiful flowers that they sent in regards to my oldest sister that we buried 2 weeks ago. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I think we do not have any applicants here today, so I won't go through the blue card program. But we'd like to move on to the agenda, and I would like to add through a motion that we add an executive session to this agenda. May I have a motion to that effect?
Second.
Vote on that, please. I'm sorry, you asked me to do that. I didn't do that. Everybody voted?
It passed.
Motion passes. Now, I'd like to entertain a motion for the agenda, which includes the executive session. It's composed of notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Items to be removed from the agenda. And items to be withdrawn in the consent agenda and regular business.
Motion to approve the agenda.
Mr. Whitewoody's made a motion to approve. And Ms. Milton has made a second. Thank you. Motion passes. Moving along on the notices and proclamations and acknowledgments, obviously, to let you know, we're having a meeting today, of course, and at 11:30 this morning, we had a finance committee meeting. The proclamations, I haven't done this before, so you'll have to excuse me. I'm not very well practiced in this. I wonder if Mr. Coleman will come up.
I've had a bit of acknowledgement of the service. Kendra has been on the commission, I think, for 11 years. Is that correct? 11 years. And when I first got here, he became my mentor. And was really the go-to guy when we really had a tough decision to make. And he always made it crystal clear as to what we were thinking about and what we should be thinking about, and laid out all the points that I thought the rest of the board members really needed to understand. So he was my, as I said, go-to guy, and he will be my go-to guy. When I got a knotty problem, I'll call him at home if he'll accept my call. Anyway, we have a... acknowledgement here and give you for your service on the NPC. You're a friend and a colleague and just a great guy all the way around. Anybody else want to say something about Mr. Coleman's service?
Well, I would.
I'm glad he's off the board.
I would like to say this, that one of the things that Mr. Coleman provided was the ability to shoot straight to the issue and separate the wheat from the chaff. And he always kept us on task. When everything was pulling us away from the task, it was always nice to have that moment of clarity that brought us back to the task at hand. So we certainly appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for your service.
I'd like to...
Can I ask that you come in front of the podium and let me get that picture? Should we have to have that? That's great. I just want to stand
there for a few minutes. So I can say something real quick and get out of here?
I got it.
I briefly want to say that it's been a pleasure serving with each and every one of you presently and all the other board members who I've served with over the last 11 years. But I definitely can't leave here without commending staff, because without you guys, my service on this board would have never been successful. And I wish you all the best as you continue on in your duties here with MPC. And I will be here as a professional standing up in front of you. So give me some consideration.
I met Mr. Mackey about 5.5 years ago, I think. And what impressed me about him was his appreciation for the consideration of the communities all over Savannah. And whenever a developer or an applicant was asking for something, he always really drilled down into the real facts about how it might affect the area. And I've learned something about that from him, and I really appreciate that. And I know you have served 19 years, is that correct? That's a long time. I'll get off the board.
Easily.
Maybe somebody else would like to say something and acknowledge.
Tim, I've known you, I can't recall how many years now, from the days of Cloverdale. And you've always been the same Tim. You've always been concerned about being a voice for the voiceless. You've always been a strong advocate for communities, and then particularly the underserved communities of Savannah. That has been your passion. And I'm going to sorely miss you as you move forward. But I always appreciate your telephone call. you'll let me put something in your ear, Carl. I hope that will continue. And the friendship that we have had prior to being on the board,
sure.
And being on the board, I want that to continue, and I wish you Godspeed.
Absolutely.
I'd like to add that when I came here, Mr. Mackey was here, and all of a sudden he's leaving. And I depend on him for many of the things about the city that I didn't know, because we moved here in 98, and we had to learn what Savannah was and how to get around in Savannah, and to realize certain areas in Savannah didn't particularly want you if you were not a Savannian. And I never understood that, but as the years went by, I appreciated. And Tim, please leave your number so I can call you in the future.
This wasn't your answer.
I'd like to say something about
him. Million phone calls.
I have not known Tim as long as some of you on the board, but he and I have had the pleasure to serve on the city of Savannah's zoning board of appeals for the last 4 or 5 years. And from day one, he was somebody that I looked up to. Tim, I just want to tell you, one day you gave me a ride back to my law office after a meeting. And I listened to every word you told me. You told me about remembering who you're serving, not just the people and individuals and petitioners, but also the city council. And this board, I take that to mean the county as well. And I really take that to heart, because sometimes we can lose track of the big picture. We can look at what we're doing here. But I've always, those words, I'll always remember, and it's benefited me a great deal to be able to navigate the process and help to get to a decision on matters maybe before the board, the ZBA, and hopefully here. And, I'll tell you too, Tim, I learned a lot about how to run a meeting with Tim. He was the chairman of the ZBA when I got on there. And then I was lucky enough to chair it for a couple of years. And, Tim, he was going to get to a decision. Sometimes you've got to take control of the meeting. And I really learned a lot watching you, Tim. And, I'm going to miss you. And I hope that we can still, I'll see you around. And like I said, pick up the phone and I'll call you.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Cities and counties, and I've served on the county side, and on the zoning board for, I think, either 15, 17 years, I don't remember. So I miss all of you. I've learned something from every one of you here. Going way back to Milton Newton and Dennis Hutton and Gary Plumley and Melanie and Ms. Gale and all of the, as I'd say with no in deference to them, the old timers, Marilyn Cernsey, John Paul Jones, Ellis Cook, all the veterans of this board have been around for eons. And I've learned something. I've learned more in this building than I could have been afforded in any classroom or any college institution that I've attended. I've met some fantastic people. I've met some wonderful people who've been inspirations in my career, in my life, and I continue to have those friendships. Gary, you are a treasure trove of knowledge. Your institutional knowledge cannot be replaced. And I'm hoping that the institution is we'll move forward. Certainly we have some challenges, but they're not challenges that we cannot overcome. But as I say in my business, communication, I never go into a meeting to lose. And I never go into a negotiation to lose. So when I walk in the door, we come out of the door knowing that at the end of the day, we'll get a decision, we'll get a contract, we'll get what we need for our people. But the one thing we can't stop doing is talking. And so I never leave a room without talking. And so when we talk to each other, we can traverse any mountain, traverse any body of water. We can do all things through talking and serving God Almighty. So I thank all of y'all. It's been a good ride, a great ride, a tremendous ride, one that I shall never forget. It doesn't matter whether you agree all the time. You're not supposed to agree all the time. If you're in anything or doing something and you agree with somebody all the time, somebody's not thinking. And so, you know, I was taught by older folks. And so that's how I try to steer my career, is from the old school guys and gals who taught me. So Godspeed to all of you. God bless you, and God bless y'all's families. And we will see each other again in different capacities, let's just pray that everything just moves forward and moves on. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. You've been a great guy. Thank you so much.
We talked about it earlier in our meeting, but I'm not going to read all the whereases and therefores and so forth. But that you can hang up in your bathroom if you
want. No, that's what Adam was calling you, sir.
Yeah. Get a bigger bathroom. I don't think we need to read any of this. I think it's important to note, I will read a few things. Gary served us for 48 years, which is a long time. A great deal of service. Did you ever have another job at all before this job?
Just in high school.
Just in high school, so. Gosh, but I'll tell you what, I've been fired many times. I've had several jobs, so congratulations for keeping the same job for 48 years.
Thank you.
But anyway, we've already talked about what we think about it, so maybe just get a picture. See, I don't like this one. You do it like that. How about that?
How about that?
Very good. Okay, thank you. Job well done.
I said it in the pre-meeting, other than to say I'm so appreciative. I'm blessed beyond my wildest dreams. As Tim said, it's been a long ride for me and him and several others, but it's one that I'll never forget. I'll always cherish. I'll always enjoy my time as being a staff person, moving from the dark ages into the not-so-dark ages now. I think this old horse is not keeping up anymore like it used to be, but it's been great. I love the people I work with. I love what you stand for. And it's always going to be a place in my heart that I will never forget. And I want to thank each and every one of you for the many kind things you said. And I'll always be grateful for everything y'all give me. Thank you a lot.
And I want to say that Gary is the chairman of this meeting. He was voted by the board, and I'm his assistant to that.
Oh, okay.
So he's asked me to run the meeting, and I'll try to do the best I can.
Please do.
Okay, we have items that have been requested to be removed from the final agenda. Item number 7, which is a
D6 Mobilite small cell program. Help me with this. We need to vote on the withdrawal, or is it?
We've already voted on the withdrawal, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Mm-hmm. We have voted on that.
Is that not the first thing you said?
So do I need to vote to withdraw?
Yes.
And I need to do them individually. Can I do the number 8 as well? In the same vote?
You can do it together.
Okay, and then item number 8, map amendment, request to rezone 2.2 acres from an RA residential agricultural zoning district to a VN neighborhood. That's being asked to be removed for this meeting. And is that going to be presented at our next meeting? As well, how about number 7 as well? Will that be presented in the next meeting? Okay, I request a motion to remove both items.
Motion to remove both items from our agenda.
Second.
Okay, so moved and set properly seconded. Please vote. Passes. Moving on to the consent agenda, we have item number 9, which is the approval of the regular meeting minutes, and then number 10 is authorization by the executive to the executive director to execute a memorandum of understanding with the Savannah Airport Commission.
Move to accept consent agenda.
It's been properly moved and seconded. Mr. Cole, I think, is the seconder. Please vote. Presentation item number 11, Red Zone Water Supply Management Plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. I'm Nick Halvel, Acting Director of Comprehensive Planning, and I'd like to introduce Rob Brown from the Ecological Planning Group here to give a presentation on a project we've been working on for the past about year and a half to update the Red Zone Water Supply Management Plan. So without further ado, I will get it loaded up. I'm a water resources engineer with the Ecological Planning Group, and we've been working on this Red Zone Water Supply Management Plan with the MPC for this past year. The project started in December of 2016. It was a grant-funded project from Georgia DNR Coastal Resources Division, and its main goal is to help with groundwater withdrawal permit reductions by EPD that are being imposed by year 2025. And we're looking to, or the reducing the permit reductions in the area classified as the red zone, which includes all of Chatham County and the southern half of Effingham County. And this is because this area is most susceptible to saltwater intrusion in the Florida aquifer, which is the primary water source for this region. One of the goals for this project was to reinstitute the Chatham County Water Supply Management Plan process, which was an MPC product back in, originated in 1995 and was last updated in 2006. It was a very successful planning process, so we wanted to reestablish that process to help us meet these future groundwater withdrawal permit reductions. So saltwater intrusion has already started occurring in the Hilton Head Island area and has impacted groundwater wells to the point where they're no longer able to be used. And historically, there were freshwater springs in the Hilton Head Island area, but because of historical groundwater pumping, it had reversed the flow of groundwater, causing saltwater from the ocean to migrate into this groundwater source. And the saltwater migration is occurring from the Hilton Head Island area towards Savannah. It's moving fairly slowly, but the models have shown that if we reduce the groundwater pumping, it'll slow the progress of the saltwater intrusion. So that's one of the reasons why EPD has imposed groundwater withdrawal permit reductions. So that's just a little background about saltwater intrusion in the Florida aquifer. So because of the progression, we're instituting planning efforts to help slow down this process. One of the things to consider during this planning process was the impacts for population change. Chatham County and Effingham have experienced historical growth, and it's projected to continue to occur for the next several decades. And based off the latest projections from Georgia Governor's Office of Planning and Budget, we're seeing tremendous growth through the year 2025 of about 10 to 20%, and then large growth through 2050. This pie chart summarizes all the groundwater withdrawal permits in the red zone area. There's a total of 44 permits. Permits are required for jurisdictions or municipalities using more than 100,000 gallons per day. And the graph is color-coded based off ones with most concern for the 2025 permit limits to those with least concern. So we looked at the 2015 usage by all the groundwater withdrawal permittees and compare that to what the 2025 permit limits were, and found that there's two that actually were exceeding the 2015 limit. And if everyone continues to use the same amount of water, there will be 11 permits that would be exceeding their permit limit by 2025. So those permittees would need to reduce their groundwater withdrawals. Because we're seeing a potential population growth of about 10 to 20%, we also looked at permit holders that were within 15% of the 2025 permit limits and found their additional six. So close to half of the groundwater withdrawal permittees are in some ways going to need to enact either conservation measures or switch to alternative sources to be able to satisfy their future permit limits. And there's probably about half or a little bit more than half that don't have any concern with their permit limits, but also would want to enact some type of conservation measures to help the region as a whole. So the general planning process was to follow that of the Chatham County Water Supply Management Plan, which I mentioned was an MPC product drafted in 1995. It was updated in 2000 and most recently in 2006. And it was created to help address an EPD goal of reducing groundwater withdrawals from the upper Florida aquifer by 10 million gallons per day by the year 2005. And based off the planning efforts from that plan, they actually exceeded that goal of 10 million gallons per day and reduced groundwater usage by 16.5 million gallons per day. And also were very successful reducing the per capita usage from about 169 gallons per person per day to about 135. So they've been very successful, so we wanted to emulate that model as we update it and expand the region to include Effingham County as well. The Chatham County plan had a task force, so we instituted a task force for the Red Zone Water Supply Management Plan, and this consisted of groundwater withdrawal permit holders, Georgia DCA, University of Georgia Public Service and Outreach, and also local environmental groups. We had four quarterly meetings during the year 2017 to review the 2006 Chatham County Plan, strategies from that, as well as to, we had developed a data assessment of current usage and presented that to the task force and looked at some potential strategies to add to the planning process and allowed the task force to vote on updating these management strategies as well as for updating the management strategies from the previous plan. And then our final meeting was in December where we presented the draft to the task force and allowed them to review and comment. So one of the main parts of the plan is a data assessment, which is chapter 2 of the plan. And this, we obtained data from Georgia EPD as well as from utilities and municipalities based off current usage and other factor and other details. We looked at the usage in the year 2015 as our base year since we started the process in 2016 and we wanted to have a full year data set that was completed. We really set this year 2015 as kind of a baseline so that we could measure progress since the 2006 Chatham County Plan, but then also use that data to identify areas where we could potentially have some other strategies to help reduce some of our groundwater usage from the floor and aquifer and target some new strategies. Just going to give you a couple of highlights from this data assessment. This pie chart represents the groundwater usage from the floor and aquifer by user group. A little bit more than half is by municipal users. About a third is industrial users in orange. Private systems and individual wells are also contributors. Agriculture and golf course are less than 1% each. So, but overall, the red zone as a whole uses about 51.6 million gallons per day in 2015. Of that, about 92% is Chatham County, and 8% is the southern half of Effingham County. And in looking at the usage from Chatham County alone in 2015, comparing that to 2004, we saw that progress from the 2006 plan's management strategies resulted in an additional 11 million gallons per day reduction in the last decade. I just wanted to present about the per capita usage for domestic and commercial systems, separated for Chatham County and Effingham County. Both counties are using about 95, 97 gallons per person per day, which has been continually reduced since the Chatham County plan was originally drafted, from about 179 down to 135 and now just to under 100 gallons per person per day. But of the groundwater usage by these domestic and commercial systems, the majority is utilizing the Florida aquifer. So over 90% of the water source right now is the Florida aquifer. So it's really important to help preserve this resource. So that's part of the reason why the planning efforts were in place. It's much cheaper for utilizing the Florida aquifer than it is for treated surface water. So if we're able to have this resource last longer, it would help with costs as well. So there are about a dozen topics that we investigated within the data assessment. I'm just going to highlight one of them, and that's with seasonal water use from municipal users. We found that based off of the peak usage in the summer times, about 10% could be attributed to irrigation. So this is using potable water for a non-potable source. And if we're able to find alternative sources, this would help reduce the groundwater withdrawals from the Florida aquifer and help with meeting reduced permit limits. Speaking of alternative sources, I also investigated water reuse from water pollution control plants or wastewater treatment plants. There's four in the area that treat to reuse standards, but we're only seeing less than one or just a couple percent of the treated wastewater effluent is being utilized as reuse. So this is an area for tremendous utilization in the future to help reduce our groundwater pumping. Also, with long-term planning, surface water is eventually going to need to be considered a lot more. And currently, the Savannah Industrial and Domestic Surface Water Treatment Plant is currently operating at 50% capacity, so there's a lot of capacity there for future use if for when we need to start switching over and there's more reduction in groundwater permits. And then stormwater, we found, is a very underutilized source for irrigation. So the management strategies are all highlighted in Chapter 4 of the Red Zone Water Supply Management Plan. The process for developing these strategies were we first started with what was in the 2006 Chatham County Plan. There were 28 strategies, and we presented these to the task force and allowed them to review them, provide updates or comments so that we could make them relevant for 2015 or 2017 or 18 now. And based off the data assessment, we identified some additional strategies and allowed the task force to either add additional strategies themselves or vote and prioritize the strategies that we came up based off the data assessment. Chapter 4 split into like three main sections. One is strategies that municipalities and water withdrawal permit holders can enact. There's also a section on regulatory considerations that the task force supports for EPD or other regulatory agencies to consider. And then there's also a section on resources. The task force reviewed and commented on the final water supply, or on the final management strategy list. And in the coming months, we'll be presenting to each of the councils and boards to have them sign a resolution of support, supporting the applicable management strategies for their communities, and then also to support future planning efforts for this Red Zone Water Supply Management Plan. In total, there's 43 management strategies under 10 primary groups, 10 primary categories. The six in bold are where the bulk of the management strategies are in. So they're really focusing on planning and master planning, irrigation conservation, water reclamation, water rate structures, water conservation, either general conservation or incentives, and stormwater capture and reuse. And all of these are detailed in the Chapter 4 of the plan. So I'm not going to go into too many details more about those specific strategies, but I'd like to thank you all for your time, and if there's any questions, feel free to take them.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chairman. I have a question about...
Sure.
I know Hilton Head, I believe, has mitigated their issue with saltwater intrusion by having a deep well into the Cretaceous aquifer. Is that... you know much about that?
They've done several things. They've put in a reverse osmosis plant for having 3 million gallons per day capacity, and then they recently added another 1 million gallon per day capacity. They installed a pipeline from the mainland to transport treated surface water to them, and then did a deep aquifer recovery.
Yeah, they went to the deep aquifer to the Cretaceous aquifer, and I wonder if is that something that you looked at in your plan for us here? Because I know Tybee, through a grant with the GFA a few years ago, had sought to dig a deep well, and that it failed during construction. I just didn't know if that was an option that you had considered in the plan.
I know that they investigated that in Tybee. It's not a specific strategy in the plan. But it was something that was considered or talked about at least during some of the meetings. Mm-hmm. But
it just, my thinking is, you know, you can have conservation, but you can also look at additional resources. And so seems to me to be something that should be looked at.
There's definitely something with looking at alternative sources, either through the treated wastewater, water reuse from that, and then also developing some type of surface water management plan for the West Chatham area through the Savannah IND plant was one of the strategies.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Tony. Or I'm sorry, Karen.
Why isn't Hilton Head, is this plan, did you engage Hilton Head at all in working on this plan?
The plan was just engaging communities within the red zone as classified by EPD.
Okay.
So just Chatham and Effingham County.
Okay.
Kind of allowing the local partners to kind of discuss plans for what we were going to do to help mitigate these issues.
With 35% of the water being used by industrial uses, are their needs as stringent for potable water as the community's needs are? Is it possible that water reuse or stormwater would mitigate some of their needs more?
There is, and the they're being under the same type of permit reductions And of the 44 permit holders, there's 11 of them are industrial users. And actually, 9 of the 11 were in that green category where they're using less than 85% of their permit limits. And the industrial users seem to be doing, or have been putting in a lot of mitigation in the past historically. I think they account for maybe 16 of the 27 MGD reduction in the last two decades. So I know that all the communities are working together, all the industrial permittees are working together too. That's why we can kind of engage all the groundwater withdrawal permit holders to include industrial as well as municipalities.
All right, now I've got one more question for you. As far as the stormwater goes, that seems like such an excellent resource. We have an abundance of stormwater here in Chatham County. Is there a focus on using stormwater?
There is a focus with stormwater being one of the primary targets in the management strategy list. Mm-hmm. And a big thing is for utilizing it for irrigation, simply because
you don't have to treat it.
Yeah. And also it includes a lot of nutrients too, so then they might not need as many fertilizers too. So it's a tremendous resource if we're able to utilize more stormwater. And I think one of the specific strategies was to kind of work with some of the warehouses and logistics community to add or to investigate utilizing rooftops from that for this treatment here, or using the stormwater from rooftops from there for irrigation purposes.
I have three questions.
Sure.
First off, is it possible to get a copy of this?
The presentation portion?
Yeah.
Sure, yes.
We didn't have a copy of it. In Hilton Head, there's no industry. There's no real industry like, the paper industry or anything like that. And it's really mostly municipal use and irrigation. Yet they've got stormwater or saltwater intrusion. We have, on the other hand, a large industry group that uses a lot of work water. Why is it that Hilton Head has experienced saltwater intrusion when, in comparison, our area doesn't use as much as they do?
It's because where they're located, and they flip back to a couple slides. I didn't mention it, but the graphic on the right shows the thickness of a confining layer, which is the layer between the surface and the groundwater, more of like a clay liner. And it's the thinnest around the Hilton Head area. So because it's much thinner there, it's a lot easier to penetrate into the groundwater. And it's where the center of it's called the cone of depression, where based off the flux of the groundwater, where kind of it all either comes into or goes out from. So it's just that they're centrally located geologically on this one, but that's why they're the most susceptible.
Is saltwater intrusion a one-way ticket? Once you get it, it's there?
Yeah, once you get it, it's contaminated the wells where they're above the EPA limit of 200 milligrams per liter of chloride, so you can no longer use it without treating to reduce that chloride level.
And the Hilton Head at one time was trying to pump water back into the ground. Was that a useless effort?
I believe they're pumping some back in for storage and then utilize it out later.
But you have saltwater intrusion, it's a one-way ticket. It's not going away.
Yeah. And I think they had spent $130 million over the last 20 years, and they're projected to spend another $80 million in the next 10 or 15 years to mitigate against these issues and to basically change their water sources. So,
Thanks, Chairman.
It's my understanding, I may be wrong on this, that the city prohibits residences from using stormwater retrieval tanks. Is that something that you guys are looking at for people to use for residential irrigation, for non-potable water?
Or what was your...
If I'm correct in this, the city doesn't allow large water tanks to retrieve rainwater off the roofs of residences. Is that
cistern systems, you mean?
Right. In Australia, every household has a big water tank that retrieves the rainwater, and they use that for the irrigation. Here, you don't see it anywhere.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, we have one of our management strategies is to promote practices that allow for the reuse of stormwater, i.e. cisterns, stormwater retention ponds, rain barrels, and so forth. So yeah, that's included in the plan.
Mr. Chairman? That's you.
Me?
Oh.
Yeah, has there been much progress being made into the more frequent delving into the Miocene Africa in terms of use?
There's not too much utilization in the Miocene right now. It's just a couple percent.
Why is that?
I think it's because of, I'm not sure the specific reason, but I know that some of the Miocene does have a little bit of higher chloride levels, and in there you're kind of pumping it from an area that's more like a clay-lined area where the fluorine aquifer is more permeable material.
Right, but it could have a secondary type treatment, which would be perfectly useful then for potable water, and I was just wondering.
One of the strategies was to investigate the Miocene more, because part of the 2006 plan was to investigate utilizing the lower Floridan aquifer and the Miocene as part of the Sound Science Initiative, and they found that for the lower Floridan aquifer, there was no real difference between the lower and the upper in terms of impact, but there still is room for investigation for the Miocene. So it's still in there to kind of investigate that as a strategy, but it's just not something that's utilized very much current.
If I could, do you have any information or insight on why the Purple Pipe project failed in Carolina as far as reuse distribution of water?
I'm not sure about that in Carolina.
Where the new developments, they were doing dual layers of piping, one for Purple Pipe being reused, sent back to do irrigation and all for reuse of water?
Several other people were at the task force meetings from the different communities had mentioned that they're installing Purple Pipe throughout a lot of their developments. It's just that they're having issues getting the water from a wastewater treatment plant that treats to that level to that pipe.
It was a lack of supply to the piping. Yeah.
So there needs to kind of be the infrastructure to connect the two, and once that's there, then they'll be able to utilize that a lot more. But they're putting the infrastructure in the development now, but just that connection is kind of missing right now. So that's another one of the strategies that was.
Have you noticed that in any of your research over the years, one of the things that y'all have is as far as a suggestion would be basically the government's seeing it as an opportunity for generation of revenue more so than conservation of water, and that has been abused big time throughout the areas having these problems. Would you like to comment on that, or you wouldn't?
I don't know if I
can. Okay, you would. And last, has there been any progress made in terms of the cost reduction for desalinization plants throughout these areas? I know that they got over 30,000 in existence in the world today. It's a thing at worst. It's just a basis of cost reduction in the processing of it.
I just know that it's very costly, and
yeah.
I don't know of any progress on the cost reduction in recently.
Okay. Thank you.
But that's usually one of the concerns why they don't shift into that direction.
Pretty good question, Mr. Chairman. Any other questions? I guess I have maybe one or two. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
As part of the strategy, have you looked at, I know you're looking at just options, when you look at the development, we've got a joint development authority through CEDA, which is four counties. And going down 16, because we're obviously running out of land and Chatham for industry. But going down 16, we did this in some parts of North Carolina, formed a water authority, which was about 18 counties. And industry was private, public, and then had a 36-inch line and went to other aquifers or above groundwater and shipped it back in a 36-inch line. Is that been looked at? Because obviously industry could use Long 16. I'm just saying, as part of the planning process, to look at that, because that's our next, for even Chatham County, that's where industry is going to go, because we're not going to have the land. Does anybody look into that? We've talked about it at CETA, of actually water authority and piping it from west here.
So you're asking about an authority or piping it from west here? An authority was one of the potential strategies brought up at one of the task force meetings, but it didn't have a lot of support when we did the voting.
Yeah, it's an act of resistance against it. Some folks in the task force were actively
opposed. So that's why you have this. A lot of negotiations.
Yeah.
But as far as a line or anything coming from, had it been, and I think it still could be looked at better from these other counties because of tax sharing, there's a lot of things you can do. I'm just saying there's some ways to look at. There's some good models out there.
Yeah.
I guess public, just like, it's all on public private.
I need to balance then the infrastructure investment to get that in, and if there's anything that's currently in more in the geographical region that I'd be able to utilize instead.
Where are you in submitting this report to, I guess, back to the state auspices of work? Give us a condition where you are now.
The plan now has been drafted, given to the task force for their review and comment. We received all their comments back, edited those, and then I had sent the draft on to Nick, and he's sent it out that it's part of this agenda. And so we're basically have finalized the plan at this stage. And
then what happens? Then what happens to it once you
finalize the plan? We're presenting it to you, and then we're going to present the plan to the municipalities and other groundwater withdrawal permit holders that request it, but focus on the municipalities in Chatham and Effingham County, and present to them such that their councils or boards would adopt a resolution of support of this plan, that they would enact applicable management strategies in their communities, and then also that they would be supportive of continuing this planning process with future updates as we move and progress toward the 2025 when there's the permit limits.
When do you see that occurring?
What was that?
When do you see it occurring? Going back to the
presentation?
The adoption.
We're making the presentations to the municipalities in February and March timeframe, and then because the grant that we're working under currently ends the end of March, so we're trying to incorporate these presentations in prior to the end of the grant. And then another portion that we're going to do is present the plan to the director of EPD, as well as to the Coastal Regional Water Council prior to that time period, too.
Could you email this? I assume this is a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah.
Could you email this to each one of the board members, please?
Sure, I can do that.
Thank you. Anything else? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I think we're down to our executive session, so should we do a motion for that?
We should.
Okay. I'd like to ask for a motion to move into executive session. Mr. Cole moved, and who seconded? Mr. Manigault?
Yes.
Okay, let's vote. We don't need to vote?
We're fine.
Okay. Okay, call this meeting back into action. We met on personnel matters, and no votes were taken. Let's see if something else I was saying. Is there anything else?
That's it. That is, Chairman. You can call for adjournment.
Okay. I call for adjournment. That doesn't require a vote.
Here.